It's time to get technically funny with the legendary Sinbad and director Jason Aaron.
What's going on? It is Tuesday night, but it's really Wednesday morning here on the East Coast. This is Technically Funny, and this is a big episode as I sit here with my co-host, the one and only Sinbad. This is episode number 10. That's double digits. That calls for some kind of a celebration. And we're coming in a little late tonight because we have some technically issues is what's going on here. We got a great guest tonight.
These issues are
a great guest.
Even when you have technical issues, if you do now, any kind of show, if you do any kind of technology,
Sinbad,
that's what
I
call it technically funny.
I hear you.
Technology is funny because they don't give a damn about you. So, Sinbad, what you think you're doing, technology. So we're showing you even with the issues we're having, we can make this work.
Oh, we got to make it work. The show must go on. So are you texting me these pictures? Are they coming in? What do you got?
I sent them to you. I already sent them to you.
Okay.
I already sent them to you. But the problem is this. Jay. Okay, our guest we got coming up. I have never seen these pictures. I've never seen him this young. I don't know who this man is. I don't know who those pictures belong to.
Well, for now we're going to bring him in.
You didn't even tell me. Look. Okay, cool. Okay, let's do that. Yeah. And then I'll tell you why I'm saying what I'm saying.
So David Hampton, welcome to the show. And you are the first official invisible guest.
Right.
I guess
yes.
Episode 10, you know, we're doing things crazy.
There you go.
Hold on, let's see. I just got these images. Oh boy. Oh, I got to get these in here. I'm gonna let you two kick it while I get this image in here. So,
okay.
So go ahead.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, Jay. Okay.
Don't
mind. Jay's putting images up.
Don't mind me.
We don't mind you. These images you're about to see, I don't know. Are they from 1975, 1985? I don't know. Had to be 70s, right?
It's the 70s,
man. Because I met you in the 80s. So I met Hampton in the 80s.
This is my pre-music career.
I didn't know you. Okay, Hampton. I always remember as an engineer. Not just an engineer engineering a show, but engineer can build stuff. Go to school for engineering, but I never knew him as a performer until tonight. This brother has never told me he was a performer.
Hey man,
ever.
I have to thank somebody I used to go out with in high school. She sent me these pictures. I guess her daughter was cleaning out something and found them.
Wow. And is she still alive?
Is she still?
Okay, bro.
She's actually a good friend for a long time. Her name is April Sim. She owns Simply Hope. And so she sent these to me. And this is, I used to DJ with a friend of mine and his uncle, right?
You're killing me.
So what you're looking at is that was one of the first things I made, which was a lighting controller that looked like a keyboard. And I was in trade school.
That's not a controller?
No,
that's not a controller?
I used a keyboard from a synthesizer. I could actually play the lights. But I made in trade school.
So you've been a nerd. You've been a messed up black brother all your life. You've been a blurred.
Yeah, I've been a blurred all my life, man.
Royce has to see this. Royce needs this. I wish my wife Meredith was down here right now. Meredith, this is too much. This is too much.
You want to know what my name was? The name of what we went by. We went by the name Jammin' Gene Disco Machine. My name was Electric Whiz because I could make all the lights go.
And you know, man, you're breaking my heart.
We used to go out to Venice Beach on Saturdays and Sundays, and we had a shopping cart with a car battery and a cassette. And it was the mini mobile roller boogie machine. And we used to go out to Venice Beach and skate Venice Beach every weekend. And that was a thing.
Take a look. I'm gonna make the world wait no longer. There he is.
All right. I want Hampton to do a favor.
What?
I want you to take a picture on your phone that you're sitting there right now. I want you to send it to me so I can send it to Jay. I need you to take a picture.
I
got that whistle. I got that whistle, brother. Yeah, that's the best conga whistle that ever existed.
I'm the original for that. I can do that.
Oh, God. Now, you look like Rico Suave.
Now, I think it's fair to say, you know, Dave, we never met, but if I ran into you on the street tomorrow, I would not recognize you from this picture. Is that accurate?
No, you know, I'm just an older version.
Hell no.
I'm just an older version.
Hell no. Hell
he's going. No. He's cold. Going with no. I'm just an older version. And Sinbad's full on hell no.
If I ran into the younger, if his younger version was walking the street right now and walked at me and said, "Sinbad, what up?" I'm like, "Man, you gonna get off me, brother?" Rico Suave.
So you need a time machine to make this happen. Is that what we're saying,
dude? This is a time capsule, brother.
Hey man, this is long ago. This is long ago in the galaxy far away.
Did you ever show this to Prince?
No, nobody ever knew. I always say, dude, I always say when I go to
Prince should have seen this.
When
man.
I go talk to people, now let me tell you something. You want to know who used to play records and do stuff at the same time? Dr. Dre. We were all from the same community. So Dr. Dre used to come see us. We actually played a house party at his mom's house. And so we were all in competition, us and what are the guys, LSD or what were they?
LFMO.
LTFO. Yeah, all the guys. Jerry McGee.
Yeah, no, I think
world class
wrecking
crew.
Yeah, yeah.
The world class wrecking crew.
Yeah, all of them. So you know.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm just an older version. So I'm sending Sinbad the one now, and he can send it.
All right. Well, we'll roll with that. We'll roll with older version. That's fine. I'm good with that.
Yeah,
no, man.
Not like this one. Keep this up. Keep this one up. I just want them to see it.
But this this is gonna stay up. This is gonna stay up for the next hour. We're good with this. I'm cool. Yeah, I'm cool staring at this for the next hour.
Hey, man, you got to
know this
big,
guy.
Dude.
I want to know this
Afro's
guy. I don't even.
You got to text Myron. You got to text Myron and everybody. Dude, I wish I had this. We got to dude. Look, man. I got to text the crew. I got to say Myron. I just got to.
Man.
Before we get into the technology, I got to do this, man.
Dave, you made this guy's night. You made this guy's night. He's texting everybody he knows right now.
Oh my God.
The whole inner circle's getting blown up right now.
I'm gonna tell Khalid too, man. I'm gonna send this to Khalid and Myron, man.
Man, that's cold.
Yo, Sinbad, just tell him we gotta get the viewership up. Just tell him they gotta hit Facebook Live right now and check out what's going on screen.
Yeah, I'm gonna send the link.
Yeah, say I got a guest
link
on my show right now.
I'm a
just
link,
go look
man
on Facebook Live and you tell me who that is. And that's it. And see where they land.
Can you hear me still?
Yeah. And you've got my picture now. So that's what I look like now.
So I just damn. So Dave, but what do you do in the world, man? What are you doing not in 1975?
Look, I got so excited. I lost y'all. I don't know.
Well, I'm an audio engineer.
Wave at me
by trade, and I actually went to school for electronics.
Can you hear me?
And I just came along at a real good time. So I am
Wait a minute. Oh, hold
I'm
up.
I'm 40
Zoom
years
hold
in
up
this, so I have several
here
decades
go
of people who consider me different.
It was
things.
Zoom. Zoom had left me, man.
So I have some people who consider me an engineer. I have some people who know me for my studio designs and some people who know me for my custom music electronic. And so that's kind of the whole thing I've always been is an assist to people who are creating music, and now it's creating music and art and all kinds of things. But anything that uses technology, anything that you, and in particular, my specialty has been studios, large format studios and creative spaces and that kind of thing. So I've been independent for most of my career.
I mean, the obvious question right off the bat, obvious question is what are you most proud of? What's the most satisfying part of what you do for you?
Man, for me, I'm most proud of the kind of father I am. So what I do is cool, but I'm most proud that I'm a father who's involved in my kids' lives. And I mean, that's really, I mean, it might sound kind of boring, but, you know, I'm blessed to do the work that I do, and I love it. It's taken me around the world. It's shown me a lot. I've had really great clients who become friends, and it's what I was supposed to do. And I'm fortunate to still be able to do it, but I really enjoy my time with my family, my time with my children, and just being able to still be here and be relevant after so long.
I mean, that's a A. You know,
there's a lot
a, of a, that's a great on. Answer. B, that takes us like right back to where we left off last week, which is cool. So that's fun. Yeah.
Last week we had
a director on by the name of Brett Culp. He makes inspirational documentaries that are superhero related, and then also he also speaks. Oh, cool. Does a lot of public speaking.
Yeah.
Just great motivational speaker. But his current documentary that he's working on now is a film called I don't know if it has a name, but it's a film about fathers and daughters and their relationship. And
Oh, cool.
So
yeah, Brett, he's an amazing guy. Yeah. He's an amazing guy, man. Amazing cat.
Yeah, I just want to add, that's nice. I just got this picture. Sinbad just texted me this picture. the now one. The now one.
The now one.
Yeah. Yeah. Older version.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
I got it.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, I look in the mirror hey, and I still think I see the same kid that was in college. I was on MTV when I was 17. On some crazy show, and I still have the video, and I show my kids, and they don't recognize me, and I don't really understand why. Because to me, I see the same guy.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently, I'm wrong.
And so does Hampton.
Yeah.
so does Hampton.
We need to go.
Hampton see the same dude.
We need to go to the same support group. Apparently.
Hey, you know what? I had forgot all about it. And you know, the funny thing is, I do go around and talk to schools. And I talk to groups and stuff, and I always make a joke and say, well, you know, what I do is in the background. I don't get on stage, and people have never paid money to see me. And I'm like, wow. And then she sent that picture. I said, wow, I guess I did go on stage.
Yeah,
man. And I guess people did
take money. You had a look, dude. But I thought you were playing keyboard. I knew he was playing the lights. So I guess you tell people
I was playing the lights.
Play the lights.
Now –
that's the other picture. Oh, that's man, the other picture,
quite,
Jason.
It was quite an extensive thing. It was quite an extensive thing. No, we had several, and this is before 1200 turntables. You got to realize our setup was based around QRK rim drive turntables. So I used to put the things together and you know, make sure that everything could go. Those are like old-time radio station turntables, but they're very torque motors, so you could do a lot of nice tricks with them. But you couldn't dial in records. You had to really know your music. So the things I got from DJing, I still use to this day. The things I learned being a DJ, how to run dance floor, how to look and know when the night is going good, the same things I use as a live sound engine. Because it tells me how to read the
audience. That's interesting. Does it play into studio work at all?
It does. It does. Everything plays into studio work. Studio work for me has always been a psychological exploration as well, because you're with people during their most vulnerable time by invitation, you know, because as an engineer, I have to curate that window of the moment, and I have to figure out what their moment looks like and how often we can try and visit that moment when we're working on music or working on.
You know,
a
I saw a great interview that you did at NAMM, I guess it was a couple years ago, talking about sort of the evolution of the engineer and how it became irrelevant and, you know, trying to keep it relevant. Take us through that, because I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have so much going on now. I've always been one that thought that the audio engineer in the early days was kind of like the toolkit that came in the back of the Mercedes. You know, you just expected it to be there. And when you went to rent a studio room, the engineer was something that went with it. So as a result, there was never anything nailed down. And it's only been in recent years where we have guys who want to be, I'm known for mixing. I've mixed this and I've mixed this. Uh-huh. And, you know, when we came along, engineering was a set of skills that had to do with not only mixing a finished piece of music, but also had to do with recording, knowing what microphones to use, understanding signal processing. It's a science. Okay, and a lot more was involved, and we've really gone to a place where it's really boiled down to a lot of mathematical equations, a lot of plugins, a lot of things that doing analytics and table data tables to help people make the right choices without really going down the road to understanding the why. And that's kind of where we've evolved. And so I think that it's Moore's law, basically, that whenever you get, you know, expose civilization to technology, you're going to have this whip effect that will never slow down. It will actually keep increasing and increasing the complexity of how this technology affects the civilization. And that's where we're at right now. We have so much information on all this minute details. Even when you engage with Spotify, yeah, you would not believe the data tables that are created just for you, your person, so that within a week of engaging with Spotify, you get a little thing that says, hey, here's some new music, Jason. You like this? We think you'd like it. But it's analyzed everything you've ever selected, how long you played on it. It's analyzed the tempo, the frequency of the notes, the frequency of the words that were used. It's analyzed everything and really spit out a personal profile on you in order to direct things at you. And this is a really interesting place we're at. It's very scary.
Yeah, too. I mean, you know, data.
Big Brother. It's everything
it takes
we talk
away,
about Big
takes
Brother.
Away your choice.
Yeah, everything we talk about Big Brother, everything we thought about them taking. Remember Facebook? Well, he know. I told Hampton when Facebook first came out. I said, "Oh, cool," because I was one of the first ones on Twitter. My son was on Twitter ahead of me. He was on Twitter. Then I got on Twitter. I said, "What's up?"
Yeah.
And no one answered me for a year. So everybody with the Facebook.
I think
nobody's on Facebook. I said, "Oh, this will be great." Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you bring up data because obviously, data is king. Like, we know how much value is in data and, you know, what Facebook does with data.
Oh, yeah.
I think, what do you think the value is of musical data?
Oh, man, I deal with it every day. First of all, I still work actively with the estate of Miles Davis. So this is a gentleman who changed the face of music several times. I never met him in his life while he was alive. He died in 1991, but I still know him through working with the audio tapes that he left for his family and the different things that we work on. So it's very important, you know, all the data and in all its forms is very important. That's called legacy material when it's like that, you know. I just did a long stint, and a lot of people know me from my time with Prince. And during that time, I was responsible for the vaults that he had all his stuff in and a bunch of other things. And again, this is, music data is so important because it is history. It is the living history of something that was created, you know, from whatever inspiration there was. You know, music is a pretty magical thing anyway because you're literally creating something from nothing. The notes are just coming to you, and you're completing it. You know, it's a pretty amazing thing. But musical data right now, it is under attack. Streaming, no doubt, is got a lot of people upset in many different ways. But the thing is, I'm less in the recording engineer business, and I'm more what's called a digital asset management business. Because the minute somebody records something, it's a digital asset. The minute I can take that asset and then manipulate it and turn it into two new products or tie it to a commercial or make it make more money than just a 2-minute song, then I'm now managing digital assets and creating more wealth. So it's very important as a concept, and it's very important as a career to be able to understand how to manipulate things in order to help people make more from what they have, because streaming has actually cut into what they used to be able to make on their music. You know, if you look at
like you said, Apple with that 99-cent download. Apple acted like they were a friend. Me and Ham just talked about act like they were a friend to the music business,
mm-hmm.
but it actually was the end of the music business. Jobs was smart, if he had kept living with what they're doing now with like Netflix and everything. They were heading that way with Apple TV now. He said, we can have all that.
Yeah.
We had Apple. We act like we're helping. We'll make service for them. We'll make it easy for them. We'll put the music up. And it's going to be great for independent artists. So everybody kept saying, yes, it was better for independent artists, but also it was bad for independent artists.
Yes.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, you know? It does. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. It's a double-edged sword. And where we're at now is that because the monetary wealth has gone down. I mean, the whole music game changed anyway because, look, if Frank Sinatra came along today and Michael Jackson came along today and Prince, if they came along today, they would have a hard way to go.
No.
They would have a hard way to go. No, they because their music model takes so much to support. We cannot support the superstar system anymore. It doesn't work like that. Right now, these folks are being pumped out and churned at a rate you wouldn't believe. Everybody is being really shot full of emotional steroids to believe that a 360 deal is your passage to the stars. And it is not. It's basically all there is to offer you on the table. And so people go for it. That's why you see some of these TV shows. I was coming home today, and the reason why I was coming home is because they were having a rap party at where I work for one of those TV shows where they want to sell you on the fact that during this season of the show, we're going to be able to pick the next thing. And this is going to be the next thing. And I got to tell you, I've been doing this 40 years, and I have yet to see a 30-minute TV show select the next thing. I mean, even though we understand that a Kelly Clarkson is born from American Idol, understand Kelly was picked long before the show started.
What do you mean by that?
Yeah.
Right? Well, yeah. That's the nature of how the shows are. They reserve the right to shape the outcome. It is a TV show.
To let them know. He don't understand. Those competitions, I know what you think they are.
They're programming.
Dude, some shows don't keep an artist because the dad is dying. I'm not going to drop the name of it because I was kind of involved through my own kid. But one girl's father was dying, and they said, don't eliminate her. This makes for good TV. And do you know she had to make a choice between going to see her dying father and staying on the show? They wouldn't let her say, hey, go see your dad and come back and sing. So they got the dad, they got the video of the dad saying, I want you to stay. And he passed away. He passed away while she was doing the show.
Because
it was good for numbers.
So, you know, at the end of American Idol, there's always a little disclaimer on the bottom that says portions of the show may be edited out that don't affect the outcome. You know, if there's an audience, are they, you would assume that they can't manipulate actual voting because that would probably be illegal on some level.
No, they can. No, you can manipulate the emotions, the heartstrings.
Yeah.
I might not manipulate the voting, but if I can manipulate the heartstring, that is manipulating.
Yeah, so that comes
if
back.
I manipulate the
so
story,
that comes back to what we were just talking about with data. I mean, they have so much. There's so much data out there. These producers know what they're doing. Yes. American Idol's in like its 19th season or something like that. I mean, this is not a new thing. So they manipulate. No. The voting is real, but everything getting up to the voting is shoved down your throat how they want you.
It's a mixture.
It's basically like, and I always tell Sinbad this, streaming is like the bump of the pickpocket, okay? And so are TV shows. TV shows are like the bump of the pickpocket. And what I mean by that is you're caught up in thinking that your vote actually counts for something. You're invested in it. You're participating. And why is it so important? It's important because they don't want you to turn away because they get paid for the amount of time you stay on that channel. That drives their numbers up. So you have been bumped and you have been pickpocketed. And what is it that you've been pickpocketed for? Well, you lost some precious time. That's what all of it is about. That's why it's called programming. You lost time. You.
Or more than anything else, you thought, I'm a true hardcore young fan. I thought I was helping somebody.
I thought
my vote was helping my artist. And you realize, maybe not, but you know, it got you invested. They know now the new thing is called the super fan.
The new
thing is, who is this new super fan that will ride or die with you? Mm-hmm. Where when you leave that show, okay, look at this. When you look at Daughtry, I always use Daughtry.
That's my guy, by the
way.
Love that
guy. Was on, what I liked about him, he came on that show with a plan. He didn't let American Idol use him. He said, I'm a rock star before I get here. And remember, Simon kept going like, I don't see you changing. You're doing the same thing. He said, yeah. He wasn't doing it for Simon. Everybody else was like this, Simon like me. People crying, Simon killed me. Man, Simon wearing them jacked up t-shirts, them messed up collars, and he gave us the Spice Girls. I'll never forgive him for that. I'll never forgive him for the Spice Girls. So that was his claim to fame, man. Yeah. But he ran there because he had a British accent. Look at, so you think you can dance. The British act, the cat with the British. Dude, we love British.
This is something I've known since I'm a child. The dumbest British guy can make it here.
Thank you.
Because everything they say just sounds smart and we believe it. It's crazy. It's like, didn't we gain our independence like 250 years ago from Britain? Like, have we learned nothing?
It doesn't matter, man. An accent is accent.
It's crazy. Now, it also gets me thinking.
It sounds authoritative.
If I go move to London, will I be authoritative there? Yes. Because I have an American accent.
No, you're called a Yank. You're called a Yank. Yeah. Mm. You're just called a Yank.
So, and so that's a
now
dead
that we
end.
Have President Trump, we look dumber.
It doesn't work
so never say he's from here. Don't say from here. This has been a bad 4 years, bro.
You know, they've been laughing at us.
I'm somewhere else right now, bro.
They've been laughing at us for a long time, man. I remember I got in a cab in, I think it was France, while Obama was still president.
Yeah,
and I get in the back of the cab.
Oh, yeah, they hate everybody.
I get in the back of the cab, and the guy speaks like three words of English. And he said to me, "Are you Italian?" And I said, "No, American." And he turns around and he points at me and he goes, "Obama." and he kept trying. I was like, what is this guy trying to say? He just pointed at me and laughed because of our president. I didn't even get the joke.
No.
It was messed up though. And that's when I knew that we had fallen from grace.
We are the joke. You didn't have to get the joke. We are the joke.
That's exactly right.
We are the joke.
Yep.
So Dave, so tell me, who is making money then in the music industry right now, aside from yourself?
No, I mean, there are people making money. Producers make money. Artists make money.
Yep.
But I think the biggest thing that I see is that more often than not, the larger amounts of money that people make from touring are always tied to sponsorship, special deals, and all the other things that come with the cachet that's connected to
selling shirts.
Yeah, connected to having large internet following. So what they've done is they've created a new kind of exchange out of how many eyeballs you got, what your follower community like. In years past, when we would prepare for a tour, you would just go and you would rehearse with the band. Nowadays, when you go to prepare for a tour, if it's a large act, you go, you rehearse with the band, but in a room that's separate from the rehearsal area, you'll have five or six people on laptops, and that's the social media team.
Social media.
And the social media team's job is to keep the simmer on the artist at all times and always be producing B-roll, always be producing the latest on what the person's doing and just trying to hype every aspect of their life so that their followers, those super fans that Sinbad was talking about, are really into what's going on. So it's a very well orchestrated mutual admiration society that works. And the reason why it works is because the artist agrees to be the financial instrument that everything is based around. And when I say finance, you know.
Well, think about it. DJ Khaled. DJ Khaled with the, hey, be smart, be wonderful. Dude, that was bigger than his music.
Yeah.
Remember, he had all these Grammys, but dude, he had these platinum records, you know, for producing, being DJ, but it was the be smart. You're smart. You talented. To the point, I said, dude, he had no life. He always had the phone up. There was always somebody recording every step he made. I said, dude, that was just, I know you're making money, but.
Well, I mean, for me, it's just so much. It's hard to imagine because we're from a different time where when we look at somebody with a publishing deal, for example, so-and-so just wrote these five songs and they're great songs, great message, and they have a publishing deal, and then you read about it and they got this big publishing deal, and it makes sense because their lyrics were so impressive. It created a word picture. It was a moment in your life, and it was something for everybody across the world. And then you hear this one guy stand up and go, "You're number one," and he gets a publishing deal too.
Yeah, because he's in the background.
What the hell, you know? And then you dive bomb into the abyss of you know, I don't want to go there, but you know, of all the expletives and all the other stuff that people have to say It's just a little much at times. You know, I go to a lot of schools, and sometimes they have me sit and listen to everybody's composition. And I have been to several schools across this country, and I've listened to the compositions. And no sooner do I listen to them, sometimes I'm always going to get somebody who's into urban music, rap, hip hop, whatever, and they're going to hit me with a song full of N-words and a song full of bitches and hoes and all the other thing. And I'm like, okay, we have parked it here a little too long, because because now you're using these power words as just chum. You're just throwing it out in the water. You know, you're wasting a good word. You know, these are well placed words that when you use them in the setting, they can really alter a situation. But if you're using them all the time, just like it loses its taste, man. It loses its effectiveness.
It becomes a standard. It's like everybody doing one kind of song. It's like when disco came in, we know that was the killing of funk. It was a one style, that one beat. Electronic music to me, it's making money. Let's face it. Oof, oof. Dude, you can't tell when the new song start and the last one ended. So it's not about me dogging the music. It's me not understanding how, I don't know how the con job came. I guess I'm saying, when did the con come in and everybody drank the Kool-Aid? I didn't know when the Kool-Aid got passed out. So you're talking about Jay, how they make money. Look at this. Okay, you got Beehive. Okay, you got Beyonce, but you got a Beehive. You got Justin Bieber. You got Believers. You got Lady Gaga, My Monsters. And these people really believe when someone says, My Monsters, I love you. And that's all they need to hear. She loves us. And I'm not saying you don't, but uh-huh. Yeah. That's right. They have control. They have control. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yeah.
This young man has been able to accrue what he has. Now, I'm not even saying let's compare the music. I'm just saying let's look at
forget talent. Career. You can't do that no more.
Yeah, forget talent. You can't talent.
Right, but I
can't do that no more.
I think we could all agree.
Talent's in the alley having a drink with the right thing to do. They might never get invited back in the room. Okay, so we're just talking about the sheer nature of the business. It's changed.
But that's all just social. I mean, isn't that nothing more than just the fact that social media rules our world and the world just operates at a different speed than it used to? I don't think anyone believes that Taylor Swift is a better performer than Madonna.
No, but social media doesn't rule our world. I think social media is one of the things that can control a good bit of activity. But I still think that for us as individuals, your biggest impact is going to come from your exchanges you have with people, and that's going to give you what's called social capital. Social capital will beat the fictitious followers every time because people will actually remember being with you.
It's the Bitcoin. It's the Bitcoin of entertainment now. That followers is now Bitcoin.
Yeah, the follow things. It's phony, phony blow your mind.
Oh, Jay, it's like this. As an actor, even an accomplished actor, even with what you've done talent-wise, They don't go, hey man, somebody's had five stand-up specials or this cast had this many hits. They actually say this, how many followers do you have? You tell your agent, dude, if you give me a movie, I'll get you followers. Not that I really want them, but they go, well, we need followers to get your movie. I said, then why are you an agent if you can't even affect change to put me in a movie and it's like I got so many followers? If I can get these followers without you, why am I paying you 10%? Why don't I pay you 5%? Since I'm going to do more work on my own. And then they look at you like you're crazy. But I'm like, you're doing most, it's not about complaining. It's about figuring out. We're in that lag period. I saw the greatness. I saw the super great, like you said, the Sinatras and Cosby, everybody above that. Then we got my generation who are the children of the great. So we got all that too. We funky too. And then we saw even the 90s, even at the New Jack Swing, still some bad stuff happening.
Yeah.
And then we saw like, what the hell is that?
Yeah.
And it got bigger and better than you, like faster and more money. So even these cats don't have a long career. Nobody goes, but they won't have longevity. It won't matter. He made $400 million in 2 months. He doesn't need longevity. Right. He's paid.
So then the
check you, Devin.
So the deeper question is then what matters more? Like what's anybody's end game? What's the musician's end game? You know, it seems like what we're saying here is just creating good music. And of course, good is in like a big set of air quotes, because what's good, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Like that's not the end game. You know, the end game is to be a performer. And then how do you define that? I mean, is that kind of where we're at?
I think the end game is for anybody who feels like they have art to be able to create their art and curate their art in the way that they deem fit. And if they want to engage in selling their art, they should be able to do it in just such a way with as much control as possible. I think that if we, you know, I can't just cut it off at music, because music is just an assist now. We're in such a video-driven society that music no longer has its own car. We used to have our own car, but now we're locked in the trunk of visual imagery. We're forever tied to what's the video image, and then the music is the ride along. You know, we're gone from the days of message music when we could have a lyric that just described the way we felt.
You guys getting a buzz too?
Yeah, I'm getting a little buzz.
Guys cool? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay? Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy.
That was kind of crazy.
Can you hear me?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like somebody trying to knock on the door and come kill us because we said something about the
they
business.
Don't like it.
I think Dave might spill some cigarette, dude.
Hey,
dude.
Okay, yeah, you know, I talk a little too much. I'm sorry.
Whoa. I'm hearing it.
No.
Okay, yeah, that was
can
weird.
You hear me now? Yeah.
No.
Okay, like your boys, Byron and them are watching right now, Hampton. He just said we're out again.
Okay.
He said somehow we dropped off the feed and everything.
Okay.
I don't know what's happening with the is that live?
It's something
stream?
With the
I'm
Zoom.
Not,
no, that's the Zoom. That's the Zoom. That's the Zoom.
That's the Zoom?
Okay. Yeah. Is it better now?
Not really. No. I would restart the Zoom on your end. Just jump back
in. Let's restart Zoom. Okay, I'm gonna restart Zoom on my end. I'll be gone for a second. I'm gonna leave, come back in.
Technology live. It's a crazy thing. All right, let's see. What do we got here? All right, I'm in.
Okay,
I'm in.
Okay,
I'm in.
Can you hear me?
Hey! Technology, yeah, man. See, it's crazy.
Yeah,
is that good?
Yeah, we're all back. That's good.
Hey, you know what? Nothing like a reset in life.
I'm telling you.
One thing we learn, I don't care if it's technology or your life, sometimes you just got to reset it. Because I'm glad this happened right now. I'm glad this happened because basically, Hampton, what we've learned is how I met Hampton was on a reset. Jay, you need to know the story. How I met Hampton was on a reset, on a real live lightning bolt reset. He's one of the pioneers of when bands were dropping members out of the bands and running the music electronically, because he's part of the whole ADAT staff, and they created when the first ADAT came out. But tell him what happened with the group that night.
So when I met Sinbad, he was the opening act for Atlantic Star. He was the opening comedian. And I was doing what was then the first computerized system to go out on tour to do computer-aided vocal assistance. What that means is...
The man under the stage.
Yeah, I was under the stage with a TV screen. And when some of the artists would put the microphones up, I had a keyboard with all the vocal parts on it, and I could play them back. And then I had things I would fire off. Well, I had about four racks full of stuff, and we were in Miami Arena. And Sinbad would always come back, say, "Hey, man, what do you do?" So he would see me, and then there was always, when the show starts, there's two guards outside my curtain, and then I go under the stage, and I do the show. And he would, and he stuck his head in there. "Hey, man, what you doing in there?" I said, "Hey, man, I can talk to you after the show." So wouldn't you know, lightning storm hits, and I have a 99-scene programmable mixer, which means it stores 99 different audio settings for all the different songs. Well, the lightning bolt hit, and it was just the right amount of everything to throw it off and sent this 99-scene mixer into cycling through all 99 programs continuously.
What?
And I am freaking
out. And I'm asking
out.
Questions. And he's asking "Hey, me man, what's MIDI? What's MIDI, man? What's MIDI? What you doing?"
And I'm like, "Hey, man, hold that." So at a certain point, I figured out, man, I got to ground this rack because this thing has been.
He's got both hands out. He's got both hands out. One hand on one rack, one hand on the other rack. And he's holding his hand. "Get over here, man.
You're lucky that thing hold this one on button."
Yeah. And I had to get Sinbad to hold one of the racks. So I had no hands free to go to the next song.
My God. Those are the good old school stories right there. You know, when things were just press a button.
That was my venture. Yeah. That was my venture into technology.
Yeah.
Because I was a tech head kid growing up. I was trying to learn MIDI. I was trying to learn all this stuff. I wasn't doing music yet, man. I hadn't done music in almost 25 years. But I love technology. I was watching keyboard players do MIDI. And I was with the 26th and the guy was playing keyboards. Jump in. But the whole time he's cussing in rehearsal. "Damn it. This piece of crap." He got the book out. Just MIDI. Man, because MIDI was not your friend at the beginning. So Hampton's trying to run a show when no one's running a show. Everybody's talking about Ableton Live now and Logic. I want to hear that crap. He's a pioneer when he was Logic. He was Ableton Live. Yeah. He was the keyboard pad.
Yeah, so, we and in hard drives, you got to realize technology was not in the place where it was. So when you had a song and the song was circles, right? And then those circles and the background singers go circles. And the hard drives in those days weren't always accurate. So there were times when everything would engage, the song would go off. But instead of singing the background for circles, I would get the background for Secret Lovers on circles. Right? And there's nothing you can do other than try and mute the audio because you're like, "Oh shit, it didn't get it this time." So you're trying to create these perfect conditions that these, you know, man-made instruments, you know, at that time, man, we didn't know that this was gonna take off to be the profession it is. Now they have a whole group of people who call playback. And they all, you know, they do that for a living. But in the beginning, it was just myself, another guy named Mike McKnight, who still does with everybody, and a couple of us who were just daring enough to go, "Okay, I'll fly it," you know.
I mean,
and y'all had some triple rigs. They would have triple rigs, so one rig went down, another rig could hit, and then they have from that rig to hit, they had another rig that can hit, dude. Yeah. I think they started spending more money on the rig than if it just brought some people to play.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
You know, the joke of it is that what we're doing right now is not much different. I mean, here we are. You know, here we are 30 years later. You know, live streaming is the same thing. I'll fly it is the perfect analogy. It's like, all right, I guess I'll try.
You know what? Live streaming doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Consistent live streaming doesn't exist because speeds aren't fast enough. the technology, and you can't depend. Okay, so Hampton might have a different camera, different speed, different quality. Jay got a different quality, different speed. There's no standards. Everybody's got something like MIDI became a standard, and all these other things became a standard. So there's no standards. So everybody's talking about, oh, man, I'm doing this. I'm doing live stream. I'm doing this. I got it down. So no, man.
Yeah.
Right now, we're just pioneers.
Yeah,
that's true.
We're just fools for the man.
Yeah.
We're buying stuff and throwing it away. Buying stuff, put it in the garage.
Go to all these trade shows. He would say, man, how come you're not excited, Hamp? I said, realize that any software you see is 75% finished.
That's
any
true.
Hardware you see is 50 to 75% finished.
Yeah.
It's showing up at the trade show so you can see it. And the reason why I know is because I used to be working for a company where our instruments weren't all the way ready. So what I would have to do is I would have to design a rig that was ready to show. And when we didn't have hard drives that were ready yet, I would just create a circuit with blinking lights and a bunch of front panels and put it in there so everybody could say, wow, look at how many they got. Wow, they're actually able to do that. And they say, I can time blinking lights to go off. You know, but the reality is you're trying to get people hyped on the next thing coming. And so these products never have a chance to finish before technology turns its ugly head on them and goes, oh, well, we're going to move a little faster.
Yeah, and sometimes they never come out. I mean, we talked I think it was in last week's conversation or 2 weeks ago, we were talking about, you know, you walk into a studio and you see all the audio faders, you know, and it's
And nobody's using it.
It's like, why? You know, is more better? Is more not better?
No.
It's more for you get paid by the company. Do you know, man, if you showed them, okay, this guy named my man Felder, you know his last name is Felder, Hampton, the producer with the Mohawk brother, Gus Felder thing, he's incredible, bro.
Ooh.
And he has a whole thing on YouTube. He's incredible. I got to send it to you. We got to get him on the show. But he's showing how he uses his laptops and his phones. He's doing 90% of his work, sitting in the cars, on the planes. And that's where it's at because it is there. It is good enough right now. It actually does exist. But if they ever find out that's what you're doing with it, they think you're not doing as much work, so they don't want to pay you. Like right now, if you don't have the board there, man, and you say, hey, I'm going to do some live streaming for you, if you just put your laptop and your iPhone and a little mixer, they go like this. Well, I'm not going to pay you for that.
Right.
So you got to make it look complex. You got to have the picture of you sitting in your studio like this, and you're by your board, and it says, the next hit comes from his board, and you turn it on, and the lights are on. They go, man, did you see his studio? But, man, he's upstairs in the bedroom making the hits.
Hey, man, when I first started my career as a tech in the studio, I noticed that if I never wanted to have a problem, I needed to have, you know, my equipment right. So I had a custom case made that I had delivered every time that I had to go support somebody in the studio. Now, understand, nobody else was doing what I was doing, which is custom keyboard and music electronics. So I damn near had Radio Shack in two cases, right? But what I was doing was where I was psychologically going to the extreme because number one, I knew how to use every piece of gear that I had. I knew how to build the thing literally from the ground up. So, but because I had entered the industry at a time where people who looked like me were not going to get the opportunity to do that, I wanted to neutralize any of that by having more than enough tools, by having organized the neat big box and rolling in with my shit so that nobody could say I couldn't get a chance to do what I knew how to do.
Yeah.
And so it was all a thing. And then as I got into it, maybe I was 5-6 years into it. I said, you know what? I got to stop carrying this because this shit's killing me. It's heavy. It costs so much. I can only do it on certain gigs. And then I started challenging myself to take less tools, right? So I go, let me just take a little clutch bag with some tools and see if I can find a problem. You know? And then you do things like that just to keep getting yourself better. I mean, you go through a lot of these things just to be able to do what you do. You know, there's car mechanics who are just so good at cars, they can listen to it, tell you what's wrong. Yep. And they started out with a bunch of tools too, you know.
That's Hampton, man. Tell him, okay, I'm trying to brag my boy. Tell him how you, like, he was involved in the rebuilding of Paisley Park.
Yeah.
It was old boards there and old technology. And what was going on when you came in Hampton, well, some people just want to be honest with Prince. they were kind of sucking him dry for the cash, bro, to build this place. And Hampton, what makes Hampton work, he's honest. He tells you what it is. He don't get involved in your life and all that. He just tells you what it's like, man. So what was that like working, redoing his studio? Because you know how he is. He's a very meticulous brother. He can be very, people get strange around him.
Yeah, I mean, it was cool. You know, you got to remember, at that time, I was 44 years old, and I had been with Herbie Hancock for like 12 years. And so being with Herbie, I was always, we were always, I mean, you were the only other one we would bump into a trade show. So our whole thing was about being ahead of everybody else. And just, we wanted to be, Herbie always wanted to be the first to use anything and the first to conceptualize the stuff. And so I'm coming from that experience, and then I get called to go to visit this guy who's a pop music and, you know, rock star and all the above. And I'm thinking, okay, man, this guy is going to, he's going to have everything at his beck and call, because I've been doing it all on jazz budgets, you know. And I get there, and you know, the place is huge, but everything is broken. Literally everything is broken, to the point where when he goes to show me the problems and talk about how, what he wants fixed, the mixer he went to show me the problem on, poof, caught fire and shut down. And so, but I just went to talk to him, and I didn't have my tools, right? So I'm going like, well, shit, if I don't fix it, he's going to think I'm a fake or something. Yeah. And if I try and fix it and I can't fix it because I don't have my own tools, not that the tools are what I needed, but it was just, I had literally just come to talk, because I really didn't believe it was him when I got the call anyway. I was just, this is crazy, you know. But you know, I needless to say, when I went to his shop to open the door to find some tools, what had been going on was that every time something would break, the engineers there would put it in the shop. Well, there were so many broken tape machines and so many broken equipment, you couldn't physically get in the shop. I had to move everything out of the shop in order to get in to find the meter, to find the tools, to try and fix the console. And so I did get the console started. And so at that point, it was all he needed to see to give me the opportunity to do the stuff. And it was quite an experience. Nothing else has matched it since. I mean, but honestly, I was talking to somebody today. I was talking to Brian, who took my place with Herbie. And I was telling him I could honestly have never done the work with Prince if I hadn't done the 12 years with Herbie. I think that Herbie prepared me for everything that I would encounter. He even down to the point of where he would, and it's really investing in you. What we were talking about is that when some of these people who we work with as clients, when they take the time to say, hey, you know, let's do this, they're investing in me. See, and I didn't realize it till I was halfway through Herbie's. I'm going like, this guy doesn't have to make a record ever again. But every time we go to do something, if I'm his engineer and he's giving me the opportunity to work, it's not just an opportunity to work. I'm making history.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, wow, this is incredible. I better look at this in a bunch of other ways. And I better try and think, as great as this person is, I got to try and get my mentality to where I'm thinking of something to make it even greater. Yeah. And so you really push yourself. And I really only had a couple of clients that go, hey, man, do what you do. And that when I finally got to Prince, and he said, man, well, just do what you do. And he threw me the keys. And I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I know what that means.
He doesn't do that often. He doesn't do it. Yeah, man.
Yeah. And he doesn't do that to everybody. And so it was a very interesting relationship we had. It was just based in almost a thing where I'm going to show you, I'm not going to say nothing. And then when I know he'd be pleased when he would – he would use the whatever I did, and then he would call me in the studio or give me his chair and say, here, sit here, listen to what I just did. You know, and that's his way of saying, hey, thanks, this was cool. You know, but he would never say, you know, because
heaven forbid,
it's just a different
heaven
kind of
say
person,
thank man. You. Heaven forbid he say, thank you, man, you the man.
man, he was a real interesting guy like that. I mean, but he was straight ahead. For me, a very honorable cat, man. He, you know, I met him at a time in his life where he was just like me. We're older guys. We're trying to figure out what the next things for us life has in store.
Yeah.
And so we don't have the time, you know, whatever he was to people, because I would hear a bunch of stories, but whatever he was to those people in the early days, that wasn't me. And when I went down there, Herbie was the one who told me, why don't you just go down there and experience who he is for you? Don't think about what you heard from other people, you know, because yeah, other people don't matter.
That's what Hampton does so well. What Hampton does so well, I think people in this business, they always tell me, hey, man, you're about to work with this director. Let me tell you some stories. Don't tell me nothing. You might be the jerk.
Yeah.
I don't know who the jerk is in a relationship. Let me get my own experience with him. Let me find out what it is. I don't want you tainting what I'm about to do. I'm about to try and do some great stuff with this person.
Yeah. That's good advice. I mean, and it was, the thing is, yeah, the conversations were, you know, were impactful. You know, when he passed, it's funny, when he passed, I told all the engineers that I was there with that I brought together. I said, you know, in years to come, we might be on a stage somewhere together and we might not. I said, but the time that you spent with him is yours. It was just for you. It's for no one else. And if you choose to talk about it, you can. You know, I do now at times, and I'm going to start in a little while. I'm going to start to go around. Myself and a couple other people are going to talk about. But we're going to talk about it in another way, because I always feel like, you know, aside from him, there's a bunch of other people I work with. And it would be an injustice to just talk about him. I just wanted to talk about the concept that people are curious about working around this thing called genius, right?
Yeah.
And then how does that interact with us in our lives, and how can we just make it turn into something else? Because I think there's something that comes from all this setup work that I've done that definitely transposes over to working in regular everyday life, because you can apply the same things. I've applied so much stuff that I learned through watching everyone I've ever worked with. And I still to this day have clients who I just go sit and talk with. I still work with Bill Withers, who's 82, and I sit and I talk with him for hours, right? Because he just has another way of looking at things. And you don't sit and talk to everybody, so I consider it an honor to be able to sit and talk to
I know. You know. Have you found the more genius these cats are, the better they are? Dude, they don't know what, they don't suffer fools.
Being genius is a very unique
thing. They don't suffer, they don't suffer fools.
They all have a similar thing, too. You know, they all have a similar thing. They all have a complex streak. They all have a childish streak. They all have... And a lot of times I'll say this, one thing I found, especially in a lot of, since I've worked with a lot of songwriters and music people, you will find that the more songs touch the world and you just think, man, that was such a great song. Man, I remember what was happening in my life when I did that song. But when you actually get to be one-on-one and talking to some of these people and you understand the origin of the song, sometimes it's from a dark place.
They'd be like, oh, you helped me, but can I help you now?
Yeah, but help the world, but it's like shit, you know.
Yeah.
I never would have thought it came from that, you know. But it's just a pretty amazing.
Oh.
It's pretty amazing when you look at the type of things that people do. So some people write to get out of a funk. You know, some people imagine what it would be to be somewhere else, and that's how they create their Shangri-La and get from another headspace. So you never know what you can learn from somebody's walk, you know, when they share it with you. And then and consequently for me, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, at 58 what I'm supposed to be doing, because I can do the other stuff, Bad. I mean, you know, we can do that with our eyes closed. But there's a whole bunch of other people that need help as well.
Yeah.
And they aren't always going to become dressed like Prince or Herbie, or they're not. And the next people who are the next talented folks to show themselves, we haven't seen them yet. We don't know what they look like.
Yeah.
But part of what they look like is the things we've seen in the past. And part of what they're going to develop from is these things in the future. So I spend a lot of my time now with younger people trying to understand what happiness and what creativity and what the moment looks like for them.
What hunger?
Because it's totally different.
Go ahead, Jay.
No, I was gonna say. I mean, what's the first piece of advice you give kids, like trying to get into this industry or make it, or you know, just find the right path? What's the first thing you tell them?
Live at your mom and dad's house for as long as you can.
That's funny but true, dude. But it's funny but true.
But work on your life. Work on your life. You know, you have to have some kind of life component. You know, you really do. You know, you can't sing songs. You know, we went through an era where we had young people singing songs about shit they had no idea of.
All that they know.
I still got you, Dave.
Okay, cool. So, you know, I think we went through an era where we had young people singing very mature songs, not really understanding the fullness of what they were singing about. And I think, you know, that has the tendency to throw some off when we have young people trying to get old so fast. So I tell most young people, just work on your life and work on trying to figure out, you know, how you're going to be a decent citizen, you know. And then also just, you know, if time is something else, man. The biggest thing I learned in the last 3 years, I have a daughter who was 27 who passed away, is that you cannot ever, ever take time for granted.
No.
Ever.
No.
So it makes you really stop and assess everything. Nowadays, I take more time to try and be with my other kids, because I'm going like, you know what? In my past, I was fortunate to have clients who let me take my kids with me. But there are aspects in my career where I would just go. And I would drive myself, just because that's what you do sometimes as a single parent. You just drive yourself to be okay through the rough times. And I just take more time now to enjoy my people. You know, and that people could be my kids. The people could be the couple friends I have, because you can't take it for granted, man. You can't take it for granted. You got to take care of yourself.
That's why we're good grandparents.
Health.
I think we
you know,
yeah.
Read books. I
become better grandparents because you realize you start talking like what your kids want you to do. That's why your kids always trip out when you become the grandparent. And they go, look, man, I got time.
Yeah.
Look, forget it. I was going to go there. I ain't going to go. And they're like, what? Because remember, But you're also driven your kids want you to be driven because they want the shoes, they want the iPhones, they want the iPads. But then on the other hand, they go like, Dad, I never see you. Well, if you put the iPad, tell me you want the new iPad. Tell me you don't want the new iPhone, and I swear, I'll cut the hours back. Tell me you don't want that. Tell me you'll get a job. You'll front that, and they go like, never mind, Dad. Keep on working hard, bro.
Never mind. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. That's it, man. All of you're very right. I mean, And so, I'm really just trying to tell them to just work on their life. That's the biggest thing, because we have so much to be grateful for where we're at. And then I just think that we're headed into such a weird time. It's very funny for Bad and I. Bad, you're a little bit older than me, but there's a point at which we start looking at the way the world is between politics and this other stuff, and we get really feeling bad about the state we're leaving the world in for our kids.
Yeah.
And it's just real hard, because sometimes I just have to say, hey, I'm sorry, guys.
You messed it up.
I'm sorry. I didn't see this one coming.
I didn't know plastic straws was going to kill y'all. I did not know plastic straws was going to kill you.
Yeah.
I would just drink. I would have drank it out the cup. I swear to God, I would have drove through and drank out the cup, and I apologize.
Well, it's better to drink it out of the cup than the paper straws. I mean, the paper straws are the worst.
Dude, you know what? You got to take, you know what? This is the funny part. We're getting rid of the plastic straws, right? Because now we need not 100 paper straws, because we're putting the paper straws inside the plastic lid that cuts up the paper as we're trying to drink. I said, man, you know what? Why don't we just put it in our hands? Why don't you just take the drink, I'll drive through, and put my hand, and I'll slurp it up. And that way, everything's good. Everything's good.
You know, listen, I care about the turtles as much as the next guy. I can't imagine how the paper straws are helping. I just don't get it. Like, don't paper straws come from trees? Are we cutting down trees now? Like, what's somebody really has to explain this to me.
But I'm going to tell you something. I want you to look at the model of Will Smith's son called Jess Water. What he's done, no matter how weird they might think his son is, he's taken a recyclable, you can get it at Whole Foods and Target now, recyclable cards, but you can keep those cards for almost a month or two, bro. Everything's used. There's a town in New York where the water comes off the hills, mountains, it melts. They pay that town member six times the amount the water's worth so they can create an economy for the people there. They take that water and they give it to Flint where people don't have water. It's mind blowing. So people say, oh, he's Will Smith's son. I said, dude, I want you to look at the carton. It's called Just Water. What he's done is amazing to me. So yes, we can do this if we choose to. We can do things if we choose to. We just choose to not do it. I'm going to kick his cartons. I'm going to go to McDonald's, I swear.
Yeah.
If I go to McDonald's for a shake, I'm going to hand him this Will Smith Jr. I'm going to give it, you know, the Jaden. Hey, man, here's put the shake in this carton. I mean, he actually got me thinking that way.
Hey.
maybe it's the blonde hair. Maybe it's the blonde hair. Makes sense. Bro.
Yeah.
Maybe that's affecting my life.
But we can't agree that Jaden Smith is a weird dude, like, you know, just outside the water thing, right? Because...
Can I help you with this? If your daddy got damn near $1 billion, you can be weird.
What else you gonna be? Nobody's stopping him, that's for sure.
Hey man, you know, you know what? Money ain't everything, but it's right up there.
Right on, baby. Right on, man. So, right. Hey, I like that one.
Yeah. You know, it can't buy you happiness, but you gotta know where to shop.
Oh,
yeah, man. No, it's I get it. You know, but again, you know what? Guys, kids like
that for sure.
Have a different view, and you know, I applaud somebody with the ability to use the resources that they have to expand that view. You know, I remember seeing a guy. There's a guy, and this this Sinbad and I, we're the only geeks that would see each other, not only at computer shows, but we would see each other at TED conferences.
Yes.
And this is way before everybody started seeing TED.
I did a TED talk. It's a crazy, yes. And they snuck me in.
Yeah,
I snuck in. I didn't pay that money. Man, it was up at the marina.
Hey, man,
oh, man.
I remember seeing this guy named Dean Kamen. And Dean Kamen invented the wheelchair that could crawl upstairs.
With the wheelchairs that could climb steps.
And that
owned his own island.
But he also had,
I think, over 175 inventions. Dude, this place was so
deep. Dropping it in his remote village.
Yes, he did.
And I remember seeing all these things. I'm like, man, what kind of thing is this? Herbie took myself and
now TED Talks in hotels. Yeah. Richard Saul Wurman. He was the original person. And they sold it to the new cat. But Richard Saul Wurman.
Sinbad, man, your Zoom is... I can hear you. Sinbad, your Zoom is acting up. Your Zoom is crazy right now. It is crazy.
Sinbad has so much wireless going on over there where he's at. He's probably got wireless and then some.
I think I might hold up.
Either that or Royce is flying a drone around the neighborhood or something.
You said he had 600 megabytes. I think it's not enough. I think you need more internet.
You need more, man. I'm gonna tell you what happened. No happened tonight. Our TV went out today. We trying to watch TV, dude. I'm gonna hear Spectrum. Yes, Spectrum. I'm gonna hear Spectrum. I had to go to Apple TV to go to the Fox app so we could watch. So You Think You Can Dance, because Spectrum called. We're on the line. My wife's on the line with Spectrum, and they go like this. We don't know what it is. I said, you don't know what it is. You sitting there behind the desk. Know why you don't know what it is?
Because
they sit behind the desk and they run all these little protocols. I said, dude, none of you guys come out. So the tech dude gonna come out. The grunt coming out.
You must be testing 6G.
Yeah, we need to skip. We need to get that 5G.
These cats, man.
We need to get that 5G, man. We need to get you that 5G.
No. Ain't gonna be no 5G. It's fake. No, no, radiation brotherhood, brother. There's a reason why 5G ain't up yet, Jay. Jay, let's get something straight. You need to study 5G. When the 5G come, kids gonna have three heads, three eyes, four fingers.
It's fine, but we'll have all that knowledge, though. We'll have all that knowledge that we were able to just consume.
But the water will be clean. Yeah. But the water will be clean because of the plastic.
Exactly.
The plastic will be gone. But plastic will be gone.
So I'll say, so listen, so I had 40 good years, whatever, you know. It's fine.
Yeah. I had a ball killing
this
earth.
All right, Dave, last question. What's the hottest thing in music right now that you're loving, technology? What are you loving? What are you all over right now?
Wow, what am I all over in technology? I think right now I'm all over Dante.
Yeah.
Dante is an application that's been around for a little while, but it's going to really – it's great. Enhance our ability to be flexible with a minimum amount of gear, and I can do a whole hell of a lot with it, not only live but in a studio, and it's gonna expand the options that a lot of people have to do stuff. So Dante is probably the hot thing right now that's going on. And other than that,
how about the 1500?
Nothing
how
beats
about the
real singers and live
how about
musicians.
The 1500?
I mean, and then I'm working on a real unique, unique project called 1500 Sound Academy.
Dude, there's hope.
So
there's hope.
It's a real unique.
This place
school.
Is hope. And, it's and hope. It's hope. It's yeah, Berkeley it. Meets Paisley Park with real music, real singers, real stuff, man.
It's,
I'm gonna have Rance come on. Hey, Hampton, I'm gonna have Rance. I'm gonna talk to Rance.
It's basically,
I'm gonna have Rance come on. Rance will break it down for you, bro. And Hampton's building it. Hampton wanted to do building it, brother.
But it's a real it's a real magical it's a real magical place. It's 35,000 square feet of really new technology, really and we're building our own ecosystem. That's the best way I can put it. We're building our own creative ecosystem that allows you in under one roof of this megaplex to own any idea
that's awesome.
You have.
Gotta go to the hood to get it.
And produce it.
Gotta go to the hood to get it.
So and we've got a lot of great partners on board right now. We're rolling Fender, the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts. Michelle Obama's
Crazy
Turnaround Arts Program, the Oscars, a bunch of people. Spotify is trying to get in, and Dolby Atmos and Netflix are all people who want to see this come about. So they all have a vested stake in what's going on, and they're sitting right there, and we're doing mind share with them every day to create a place that technologically is so advanced, all you have to do is just say, okay, here's what I'm thinking, and you have disciplines and experts from each one of these sectors that says, okay, well, if you want to get the most out of your thought, here's kind of what camera you should be looking at. So we have a Netflix people that kind of tell us how to use the equipment to get the results we want. Then we got this sound, so we got Dolby we can go to and say, yeah, well, here's what we're trying to do. And we've never had this kind of way that corporate technology and creatives have worked together under one roof.
I'll bring Rance on, man.
So that's what we're creating.
Maybe I think the best. I should come. I should go down there.
Really excited.
And whatever we can show,
you should bring Rance
on with the live view camera. I was just gonna say that.
Yeah.
Because Sinbad, I didn't even tell you yet, but in 2 weeks from now, I'm gonna be out in LA, so we should do a live one from there.
Oh, dude, yes. It's gonna hurt you. It's gonna hurt you, bro.
We'll do a live podcast from there.
Yeah, you can make your little place and your little sound, and you'll be pissed. Yeah. I wish I was 25. I wish I was 25. Not broken 25. I wish I was 25 with the money I have now.
Hey, man, you know what? I challenge y'all. I challenge y'all. Oh, brother, when exist. I see
brother,
you
I'm gonna show
weeks,
you mine.
I want to see
dude,
your
dude. I'm gonna show you my
seven.
Basketball. Yeah, I'm gonna show you my hoop. I got a fro like yours. I got one look just like
man,
you. So I got
yours.
A basketball in my hand. Yes, it was.
Hey, man,
yes,
but
it was.
You know what?
I would tell you that
it's not like the
Afros,
not the Afros that went now in the NBA.
No, I wasn't around in the 70s, but I have seen my dad's pictures, and they look exactly like yours. Same thing. No different.
Oh, yeah, man. That's right.
Oh, yeah. Same Afro.
Dude, man.
Same Afro, different,
dude, all the
different,
Jewish,
different color.
All the Jewish kids in my neighborhood rock froze. They used to call them Jufro. And they rocked Afros just like brothers. Mm-hmm. Yes, it was the Jufros. They walked like us. People threw rocks at them just like us.
Jufros, yeah.
Except
they
owned clothing stores and they had all the diamond centers.
Oh, no doubt. I mean,
and
listen, honestly, my fourth grade picture doesn't look much different than this either. So who are we kidding, you know?
Yeah.
I had no product back then. There was no product. You know, we just rolled straight. That's it. Done.
No, brother. No product, brother.
No products. That's it. Amen.
It really was.
You know,
yeah.
That was. You know what? It was a simpler time back then, man. It was a simpler time when there were not that many products to choose from.
You just had.
Yeah.
Proline.
Yeah.
Yes, right.
And Pro. And,
yes.
And Proline.
And then Randy's Record Shop. They used to get on the skip.
Yeah.
And they had the what was that? The daddy shop. Dude, there's some kind of cream you have to use in your hair, man. Oh, I gotta remember that commercial, man. Yes, the hair growth.
Oh,
had
you
a blowout
the hair
pick.
Growth.
James,
cream
it was a pick
cream.
You plugged in. You plugged this pick, it was a
blowout
hot pick,
cream, yeah.
And it burnt your
kit.
Head up.
Mm. Blowout kit.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good time.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Afro Sheen blowout kit. Yeah.
Hey, I hate to tell you this, Jay. I hate to tell you this.
Yeah.
Guess what we're rocking right now? The Black Magic 6K. We get the Black Magic 6K, bro. We get the Black Magic 6K.
My God.
We broke down and got the 6K. So Royce is rocking the 6K, man. 6K, brother. You know what I mean? You can't air it nowhere. It can't air on the internet.
It
can't air on TV. It can't air nowhere. But we got it. You can't use it.
That's
where.
It.
But then,
that's all
but when you compress it, they say, "Oh God, does it even look better?" Oh man, when you compress it, don't look better. No, not
they're
that much better than 4K. Here's the funny thing: once you get over 4K, you're like this. Man, you see that 6K? Yeah, then you lie. What do you think, man?
Oh yeah,
they've had.
Well, let
they've me show
had
the 8K one.
Exactly.
Yeah, they've had 8K.
Oh.
They've had 8K at NAB for 2 or 3 years already. The 8K monitors,
yes,
the 8K
yes.
cameras.
Yes.
I don't know what anybody's doing.
With the curved screen.
Yeah.
With the curved TV screens.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's going to have. They get the curved TV
you know,
screen.
I mean, maybe. Yeah, maybe I'm a skeptic.
Yeah.
But I remember the first time I saw that, I said, this is not going to possibly work.
No.
Like, I don't. Now, the irony is.
No.
Yeah, the curved screens. I mean, the irony is all
movie
theater
the curved
screens are curved. When you go to the movie theater, they're all curved.
Thank you, man.
But. It was,
yes.
Nobody wants
look
it in their living room.
But look how big it is.
Yeah, but it's a funny thing.
nobody really needs that in their
screen.
Living room.
Yeah. And it feels like you're
thank
forcing
you.
Yourself
thank
into
you,
macular
man.
Degeneration
thank
by using
you,
something
man.
Like that in such a small format. You know, it's like, where can I stand to where I'm
where's
I'm
the
not
sweet
feeling
spot?
Like I'm
where's
on a carnival.
The old man? I got the parallax
we
effect.
We passed it.
I got
we
the parallax effect. Uh-oh.
Exactly. We passed it. We missed that boat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? I'll be interested to see this January what the new thing
it's
is.
Already
January? I know one
oh
of
my
the
God,
companies
it's already
that
January?
We're messing with now.
It's already January. Like, oh, man. Oh,
yeah, well,
God.
A couple months.
Oh, God.
You know, they got like a 86-inch screen, 86-inch flat screen or something. They got some crazy, crazy sizes now. And then they got the other.
I like the wall. I can get down with the wall.
I was at Drone World. I went to Drone World. I bought a low projector, this big hand. You got to use it. It'll do 102 inches on the wall. It'll put 102 inches up on the wall, man. And And oh, also, God. I got little drones like this. I'm going to get 100 of them, and I'm having formation follow me as I go places. All my drones will walk with me. I'll be the king of the drones, and I'll have my following. I'll be Kanye West of drones.
I'm the Kanye West of drones.
And they do choreography, and I program it.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh, my God.
It has no purpose whatsoever.
Drones.
None.
Between the drones and the mini subs, there's not going to be anything left
That's it. As we lose Sinbad.
Trump just turned me off.
As we lose you once again. Oh, you're back.
Yeah, Trump just turned me off.
Oh, you're back. Okay. All right.
Trump,
let's see what's up.
Trump turned me off. Trump got me, all man. Right. He got me.
Well, it's 1:45. It's 1:45 on the East Coast. 1:45 in the morning. And I probably got to go to work tomorrow. So that's it. Episode 10. Dave, man, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you. Good talking to you.
Yeah, that's
I hope
2 weeks.
I see you when you get out of here. We definitely should
that's
do the
it.
Show. Yes.
We're going to go by, bro. Yeah.
That's it. Signing.
Live view.
Signing off.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Live view.
Well, that's about the only thing.
Live view.
That's about the only thing that worked tonight. That's about the only thing that worked tonight. So
I know.
Amen to
that.
It
shows you. It shows you how strong they are.
Live view.
Nothing I'm going to do from now on.
Live view shows up every week, man.
Can I do this?
Live view shows up.
I'm going to run my phone through live view from now on.
Through live view?
I used to do it in the car. I'll get the connection, like for Ethernet. Ethernet to Lightning.
We'll figure it out.
And I would run it. I'd be in my car because the guy's saying he uses that when he's traveling the road. So if it goes between T-Mobile and everything, he ran it. So I can still run it. I'm doing now. Nothing has to change. I'm just using that instead of my wireless in the house. I'm using the LiveView pack.
There it is. Next week. Coming soon.
All I'm going to have is bonded cellular. Just bonded cellular around me and cameras and Wi-Fi
and
5G burning my face off. That's right.
And drones. All right, man. Say goodnight to the people.
All right, man. Good night to the people, man.
See you guys. Bye, man.